Welcome to Hair Metal Memories. We are your hosts. I'm Brian.
And I'm Aaron.
And we're going to start out today. I just wanted to give a quick shout out for our audience. If you haven't been watching this show, Peacemaker, on HBO Max, you really should if you're a fan of this show. The entire soundtrack is hair metal. Which it seems like such an unlikely choice in this day and age, but like, I mean, literally every song that is in that show is a hair metal song. You know, I've been watching it pretty religiously. There's only one episode left as of this recording, but they've been playing stuff from like Y&T. The theme song is by Wigwam, and they have a great dance sequence for that. Firehouse, Faster Pussycat, who we've talked about on this show, Hanoi Rocks, who we're going to talk about on this show, I'm sure.
That's right.
House of Lords, Enough's Enough. John Cena does a piano version of Home Sweet Home during one of the pivotal moments of the show. Lita Ford, Kicks. I mean, just I just thought I'd throw that out there if you weren't aware of it already. Definitely worth your time if you're a hair metal fan.
And with that, we're going to veer wildly into other territory this week.
Yeah, this is a very special episode. We're doing something different today. This is going to be a bonus episode. Usually we pick an album, we do a deep dive on it and talk about it. We've been mulling this over for a while, how we're going to do, we want to do some bonus episodes and do a little bit of background stuff. So today we're going to do, an episode on, you know, the hair metal influence. Basically, we're going to talk about the band UFO. UFO, not a hair metal band.
Nope.
Yeah. But they were so wildly influential on metal itself and hair metal in particular, that we thought we should talk about them because they're not huge in the U.S.
No, but they have some very devoted fans.
They do. Yeah. And they've been around a long time. UFO was formed in 1968, which is the first band I think we've talked about that started before I was born.
You know, there's a good chance of that.
Yeah, so that's kind of strange. They were formed in London. They're the transition band between hard rock, you know, like Sabbath and Zeppelin and Deep Purple, heavy metal, and the new wave of British heavy metal, which and the reason that's significant is the new wave of British heavy metal incorporated elements of punk and spawned Iron Maiden, Def Leppard, Motorhead, Saxon, and a bunch of other bands too. I feel like they're one of the biggest underground bands in music history in some ways. I was thinking about this one day. They're like the Velvet Underground of metal, where like no one bought their records at first, but everyone who did started a metal band.
Sure feels like it, you know? I was a little bit older before I even found out about UFO, just because it was kind of a few levels.
Right.
Removed from most of the things I knew. And I knew who Michael Schenker was because I think the Scorpions got a lot more attention. And even though he wasn't in the band when I found out about him, the Scorpions, they would still talk about like Michael Schenker. And I think that's how I ended up working back and getting to UFO.
Yeah, same. That's how I was aware of him, is through the Michael Schenker connection, you know, Scorpions and the Michael Schenker group and stuff like that. And he was featured prominently in a lot of guitar magazines and stuff. I knew him more as a guitar player than as what band he was in, even. But like, you know, UFO never had that breakthrough hit over here in the U.S. or any of that stuff. They were way more of like a UK and European sort of like, you know, phenomenon. That was, you know... So it's kind of weird, but they influenced so many bands in America and toured America so much. And they, even though they were like, you know, more prominent in Europe and stuff like that, they ended up opening for all these huge American acts, you know, so it's sort of strange. They have 22 studio albums. So far, they're still active. I know they're gearing up to retire a little bit.
They had planned, at least Phil had announced that he was going to retire, and the last go round was going to be his last go round. Yeah. He left the door open for if somebody wanted to take over for him, he wouldn't have any problem with that, I believe. But they still haven't ended it simply because, you know, the whole world shut down and all that stuff.
Right. So, yeah. I think they're planning one last tour, which I would love to go to that if it comes anywhere near here. They have 14 live albums, and they have a career that's over 54 years long. So that's pretty impressive. I mean,
and one of those live albums is regarded as one of the best live albums like ever.
Yeah.
Strangers in the Night. Come on, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna talk about
even
Strangers
in my you know limited UFO knowledge. I do love Strangers in the Night.
Yeah, and 54 years long as a band, that's got to be up there with like the Stones and the Kinks, right?
It's getting close.
I mean, it's got to be in that neighborhood. It's so like, you know, the fact that they're not spoken about in these same breaths is sort of like a little odd to me.
Well, you know, because they came along at, around the time that album rock was starting to become a thing, and you didn't like, I don't know, you could be like a sustaining band and not have big hit singles, and you could just like tour endlessly and stuff, which they apparently did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They also have 16 compilation albums. And they have an album of cover tunes. So, I mean, they've been fairly prolific.
And it's a crazy list of covers. I was looking at that record.
Yeah, they've sold over 20 million records worldwide. They're mostly known for their period of the 70s and the early 80s. And that's what we're going to cover today as it's like it's the most relevant period. They have albums after the 80s, but like...
And a Shrapnel Records guy is their guitar player, has been their guitar player for longer than any other guitar player has.
Vinnie Moore.
Vinnie.
Yeah, who's a significant guitar player too. And I was also going to throw out there, I made a Spotify playlist of the songs that we're going to be sampling today. We're going to play some of their music for you and really let the music do a lot of the talking for us. Because I'm guessing most of the people listening to this haven't listened to a bunch of UFO. So we're just going to play, you know, chunks of their tunes and stuff. But
if you have listened to a bunch of UFO, well, then you know what? You get to listen to some more.
Right,
so we all win.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a win. Yeah. But I'll post that Spotify playlist on our Facebook page if you want to check it out. You can listen more of that, and you know you can follow the links from there and listen to whole albums if you like. But yeah, let's dig into some UFO.
Hell yes,
they were originally called Hocus Pocus, but they changed their name to UFO because there was a famous London club where Pink Floyd and bands like that played called UFO. Lead singer Phil Mogg. Is the only consistent member. Is Mogg, is that how you say his name?
That's how I've said it.
Okay. Phil Mogg, he's the only consistent member.
Kind of sounds like a D&D creature a little bit.
Right, yeah, the Mogg. Fight the
Mogg. I rolled
an
encounter and it was a pack of Moggs.
Yeah.
Or is that, no, wait, hold on. That's John Candy from Spaceballs.
Mogg?
He's a Mogg. He's his own best friend.
Oh, wow, okay. Sorry. Yeah, he's the only consistent member, and they've had a lot of lineup changes. So, like a lot, like rivaling Deep Purple and stuff like that.
Now, Andy Parker has spent a lot of time in the band, and he left a couple times, but he's definitely pretty long serving.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Phil Mogg's the only one. He's on every UFO album.
Correct.
He's like the Robert Fripp of this band, where like in King Crimson, Robert Fripp's the only consistent member on every album, and Phil Mogg is that to this band. As a side note, Phil Mogg was a junior boxing champion in North London before his music career, which I thought was kind of an interesting little tidbit. So they started out by releasing two albums of pretty unremarkable blues-based space rock. And this has nothing to do with where the band would go or
no,
what we're talking about.
No, not
but,
at all.
But I did pull out a sample of one of the songs just as a reference point, mostly so we can see how quickly they change. So let's listen to a sample. This is a song called Boogie, which was kind of their first hit. It didn't really go anywhere, but it was kind of like their first hit. So let's check some of that out just to get warmed up.
We'll be right back.
that's from 1970, and mostly I listened to the first two UFO albums just because I wanted to get some grounding on it. And my main takeaway is like, man, they listened to Pink Floyd and The Who like way too much.
This song actually made me think of Cactus, but like with a guitar player who's not quite as good as the guy from Cactus.
Right, yeah.
I mean, no knock on the guy. He's perfectly fine and everything, right. But yeah, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, functional, but not exactly inspiring.
Fun. The weird thing, originally this song was called Boogie for George on the album, and it's just been called Boogie since then on the like CD or whatever. But in the U.S., this came out on Rare Earth Records, which was the rock and roll subsidiary of Motown.
Oh, wow.
So this, at least in the U.S., is part of the Motown catalog.
That's pretty cool.
Freaking weird.
That is,
I will
weird.
Say, I do enjoy the production. I like the sound of it. It's just nice and just a band rocking out in a room and everything. So I've always appreciated that. But
yeah, it's not bad. Yeah.
No, it's not bad or anything. It's just that, you know, like when you've listened to like Where They Go, it's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So they struggle a little bit after this. They've put out two albums and they're like, well, what are we going to do? And they finally get Michael Schenker in
the band. They happen to do a tour with the Scorpions.
Yep. And Michael Schenker is only 18 years old at the time, and he decided to quit playing with the Scorpions. And he's a super accomplished guitar player by this point, even at 18. And so they pull him into the band, and he immediately gets songwriting credits. He becomes an integral member of UFO.
And that's a trip, too, because, you know, the Scorpions almost did, like, the same thing. They put out two albums of kind of like this, this space rock, this kind of, whatever. And then they lost Michael Schenker and pretty much did the same thing that UFO did and became, like, way awesome.
So now we're up to 1974, and they record the album Phenomenon.
Which I just rocked out to this morning.
Yeah, great record.
Fuck yes.
Well worth listening to. It's produced by Leo Lyons, who was the bass player for 10 years after, if you're into like 60s rock and stuff like that. Yeah, 10 years after, have a great album.
They're
called
pretty solid.
Space and Time is the one to check out from them. And it's pretty good stuff. And they have a minor hit with the song Doctor Doctor, which becomes a staple in their set from now on. And Iron Maiden did a cover of Doctor.
And the
Doctor.
Last song on side A, Rock Bottom. Holy shit, that song freaking smokes. Yeah. So good.
And we're going to get there, too. Let's play a little bit of Doctor Doctor.
Hell yes.
Real quick. Way different sound than the space rock stuff they were doing before, and it's a great sound. It's like,
hell,
you know,
yes, it is. It's thoroughly rocking,
and this is a pretty great album. I highly recommend, if you want to start with UFO, this is the place to start, I would say. If you're doing it chronologically, anyway.
And fun fact, this album actually features kind of a backdoor tie to an album we've already talked about, or at least a band we've already talked about. Because right before they had Michael Schenker, they had a brief experiment with Bernie Marsden.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
He was in the band for just a hot minute before moving on to several other bands, including Babe Ruth and all that. But he actually plays guitar on tracks 11 and 12 on this album.
Okay, sweet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Those are bonus tracks. I apologize for that.
Oh, that's okay.
That's right, because they recorded some sessions with him, and well, it clearly didn't work out because they went with Michael. But yes, right. Bernie Marsden was in the band for a hot minute, and he was in Whitesnake, and I believe has a co-writing credit on Fool for Your Loving.
Yeah, nice. So,
yeah, he was in UFO for like a second.
And you mentioned the song Rock Bottom. Let's play a little bit of that too, because that song is super sweet.
Absolutely.
Give him all this space to just like, you know, here's
they just let him go off.
They let him go off, and it builds. You know, it's like there's structure to it. It's like, you know, it's noodly and wankery a little bit, but like it builds and builds. I also liked how in the beginning of it, he has those little volume swells that he does, which has got to be the influence of Roy Buchanan, who was like this famous blues guitar player in the 60s that was asked to join the Rolling Stones and stuff like that. Yeah, check out if you're not familiar with Roy Buchanan, check it out. He was a very influential guitar player. Yeah, he was pretty cool. Yeah, but like, you know, I have to imagine that was his influence because he's the big volume swell guy that everybody looked up to. And one other thing I wanted to mention is the cover of Phenomenon was done by Hypnosis, which is like the design group that did all the Pink Floyd album covers. And
you can usually spot a Hypnosis album from a mile away.
Right. You've seen a ton.
They have an art style that like sticks out really bad. I bought a record because I was just cruising one day and I saw the cover art and went, I'll bet you Hypnosis did that. And I was so happy that I discovered it was them. So I was like, all right, I'll buy the album. Turned out it was a really good album too, so that was nice. But
yeah, if you've ever seen the cover to Dark Side of the Moon, which I'm assuming is everybody, that was Hypnosis and, you know, and many other.
Def Leppard's High and Dry.
Oh, they did High and Dry. I forgot about that. That's pretty cool.
Yep, that's a Hypnosis record. Animal Magnetism.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's a Hypnosis
okay.
record.
Okay. Yeah, and Hypnosis did all the UFO album covers, so that's kind of a trend we'll see, you know, as they go on. So bonus points for being cool enough to hire Hypnosis right out of the gate, you know. So anyway, 1975, a year later, comes by, and they released the album Force It.
My favorite of them.
Yeah, which was their first time charting in the U.S. Leo Lyons, the bass player from 10 Years After, produced again. And Chick Churchill, who's another 10 Years After member, played Fender Rhodes keys on it. Another Hypnosis cover. This one,
and
slightly more controversial.
Genesis and Cozy of Throbbing Gristle are on the cover, and that's so badass.
Yeah, this album cover has a reputation for basically being favorable to sexual assault. Force It is the title, and it's two people in a tub looking like they're getting it on. But it's kind of, that's kind of not what's going on. But at the same time, I mean, do you want to describe it?
Well, it's Genesis and Cozy in a tub together. Yeah. Clearly,
two people from Throbbing Gristle, which is
clearly very excited to be in that tub together. Uh-huh. And then there is a whole bunch of faucets all over the cover.
Right.
Because it's a pun on the British slang of faucet.
Yeah.
In the U.S., they took the figures and kind of obscured them and made them transparent. Like they're these spooky ghost people like fucking in a tub, which I guess is somehow better.
Yeah. Yeah. they were just naked enough to hit the standards of whatever was going on at the time, especially in the U.S., I'm guessing. So, interesting cover story. And I do love it that they got like the members of Throbbing Gristle to be on their album cover. That's like so cool. That's how influential those guys
were. I mean, Throbbing Gristle, I don't know if they were like a thing yet in 75. I honestly don't remember. My Throbbing Gristle knowledge is not much. I like them. I've enjoyed what I've heard, but yeah, I don't know all that much about them.
Yeah, yeah, same. I don't know how they ended up being on that cover. This album starts with the song Let It Roll, and let's hear a little bit of that just because it rocks and I just really like it.
I was hoping that was one of the ones you picked.
Has a lot more vocal harmonies on it, which was probably pretty advanced for the time, I would say, because especially in the hard rock genre,
And Phil is the only credited vocalist on the album, so it's just him going overdubbing himself as far as I can see.
Yeah, and
unless
and,
anybody has any inside information on that, hit us up.
Yeah, but and that I think vocal harmony has become, that's one of the early signature marks of hair metal. And so, like, I think these guys were pretty instrumental in bringing that out. And they also, they have acoustic guitar on this album, which also becomes sort of a signature move to have in hair metal that wasn't originally part of hard rock.
Very correct.
Yeah, you had like Zeppelin and other bands doing that, but like more of the blues-based stuff, but like not so much with the hard rock. So this feels like the seeds of hair metal to me when I hear this stuff. I also, like, as a prime example of this, I pulled out a sample of the song High Flyer that's off of this because I feel like that's kind of a good staple. Let's listen to just a little bit of that. This is 1975, and that could be right out of the 80s, right in the thick of hair metal.
It just has that sweet, sweet 70s engineering.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, the songs are generally catchier on Force It, you know, than they were on the previous album Phenomenon. And Michael Schenker's playing becomes even more melodic, I think, on this one. Before he's proven that he can rock out, and now he wants to show that he can, you know, dude's got some taste. So there's another one, though, that shows off the guitar flash, and it's kind of epic. It's like This Kid's Between the Walls, and this one's epic, and it has harmonized guitar parts that I love. This sample is a little bit long, so I'm going to apologize in advance, but I totally think it's worth it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's some groovy stuff.
So 1976 comes along, and they released an album called No Heavy Petting. This is another Hypnosis pun cover with a monkey on the front. And they employ a full-time keyboardist for the first time, a guy from Argentina named Danny Peyronel, who would later write for the Mason and Fenn album, which I mentioned that mostly because Aaron and I are huge Pink Floyd fans. So Nick Mason did an album with Rick Fenn from 10cc, and I know we're both big fans of that record. So
oh yeah, Profiles is an awesome album.
Danny Peyronel co-wrote the only two songs with vocals on the Mason and Fenn album, and he sang one of them. He sang the song Israel, and David Gilmour sang the other one, Lie for a Lie. Yeah, yeah. But Danny Peyronel wrote the lyrics for that, which I thought was, I did not know that.
Nope. Until that's this. New to me, too.
He also later wrote a Sade song and collaborated with Desmond Child and Bon Jovi. So, see, hair metal relevance right
that.
There.
Look at that. You got a through line that is perfect. Cha.
And nowadays, he's an opera singer. So, yeah, so the guy that helped that played keyboards for UFO has had his own illustrious career.
Dude, cover some ground.
Yeah. I really like the song Belladonna on this one. So let's listen to a little bit of that.
Just carelessly placed, and you move in silence, the tea so delicately laced, out of reach, out of touch.
Another highlight, I think, on this album is a song called A Fool in Love, because it sounds like about 100 hair metal songs to my ears. You can hear bits of Lover Boy in it, and on and on. Well, here, let me just... I'll just play it. You can decide.
People say I'm a lion at heart, but they don't know what I am. People say that I stand apart, but they just don't understand.
I could totally hear Loverboy playing that song, or you know, if it was a little bit like you know, grittier, like Motley Crue, even
sure,
like, you know,
absolutely
doing something like that. And again, we're only in 1976 so far.
And it helps show that songs with cowbell have an amazingly high batting average as far as quality goes.
Yes, they do. Yeah, as much as we joke about cowbell, thanks Will Ferrell, you know, like it really does end up making, you know, they're the fun songs. Everybody gets the groove. And this album closes with the song Martian Landscape. I don't have a sample of this, but I wanted to mention it because, like, it's a bit of a departure for them. It has like this majestic piano and things like that in it. And it's worth checking out, but I thought we'd covered this album enough. So
people like to get expansive in the 70s. It was a time for that. The studio was really opening up as a place you could fuck around in. It wasn't just for like Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, and then we're these guys are remarkably consistent, because you'll notice each one of these albums is like, and then the next year, so we're up to 1977.
Back when bands put out records every year,
right, yeah.
Of course they don't get to own the rights to any of those records, so there's a downside to all this.
Right,
so,
yeah, the contracts forbid them from any of that.
When we're all back in the day, they made a record every year, and it's like, yeah, and you know what? They get no money from those.
Right.
So
good time to be a fan.
Yes, it was. It was. And they actually switched up producers for this album.
They did, yeah. They put out the album Lights Out in 1977, and this is all originals again, but they do a cover of a Love song, which I thought was just like,
right?
Wow.
That's like, okay.
That's pretty cool. If you haven't checked out Love, they're a good 60s, how do you describe Love? Like poppy, like chamber pop or
like
something?
Crazy weird chamber pop psych.
Yeah. Yeah,
excellence.
Yeah, yeah. Check out some Love if you haven't. They're really good. And this became the band's highest charting album, number 23 on the Billboard Top 100. And Kerrang! Magazine listed Lights Out as album. It listed as number 28 among the 100 greatest heavy metal albums of all time. And Steve Harris of Iron Maiden said the song "Love to Love" is his favorite song of all time. So that's pretty cool. This record has string arrangements and just more complex arrangements in general.
And Paul Raymond is firmly entrenched as a member of the band.
Oh, yeah. And you mentioned the switch in producers to Ron Nevinson.
Who produced Ultimate Sin.
Yeah, and the Who's Quadrophenia. He was an engineer on Quadrophenia. He didn't produce it. And he also was an engineer on Bad Company's debut album. And
he produced the MSG.
Yeah, and Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, Jefferson Starship's Nuclear Furniture.
That's right, baby.
Yeah, which had good production on it, you know. Firehouse, Ozzy's Ultimate Sin
Everybody's
album.
Favorite Kiss album, Crazy Nights.
Right. Yeah.
He's sorry, I'm not trying to diss, but you know.
Yeah. The guy's done a lot. I really like the tune Just Another Suicide, which uses piano and acoustic guitar in the mix of things. I think that's pretty cool. So let's play just a little bit of that. This album's like another notch up in terms of like being melodic, I think.
It's my second favorite after Force It.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good record. It's
worth
checking out.
Fun fact, they reissued this album in 2008 and it had some bonus tracks on it, and they're live tracks. And these live tracks were recorded at The Roundhouse, which was another place that the Pink Floyd used to play back in their early days.
Yeah.
So, hey, there you go. There's more Pink Floyd stuff for you.
Get tons of Pink Floyd connections.
Yeah, that's mostly
band.
Just for Brian and I. I don't know. We don't know how many of y'all are Pink Floyd fans the way we're Pink Floyd fans, so some of that might be just for us.
Right,
but, you know, if you're also a fan of the Floyd to that degree, awesome. That's for you, too.
The title track on Lights Out reminds me of a Zeppelin song. It reminds me of Achilles' Last Stand, specifically.
I exactly hear what you're hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's play just a little bit of that. Very Zeppelin-y, very, very Led Zeppelin presence, you know, sort of stuff. And of course, we mentioned the song "Love to Love." I feel like we should play some of that in honor of Steve Harris, and also because it rocks.
That's right. Here's to you, Steve.
And it's over 7.5 minutes long, so it's extra epic. We're not gonna play.
And
it
we found thing. A longer right. version.
Yeah. Here's just a smidgen of it. Album was their first to actually get like critical acclaim for them, and so they found like, you know, which led to a lot of sales for them and stuff, and they saw their star rise a little bit, which was kind of cool, and they got to play arenas for the first time, and they opened for Rush and AC/DC, so like, you know, again cementing their connection to a lot of this kind of music.
I would be like sold on either of those tours. I would go
yeah for sure,
or both of them. Fuck.
Yeah. But then
we start to have what we call the I don't want to work with Michael Schenker anymore things.
Things start to kind of hit the fan a little bit.
He comes and goes from bands from a lot, and people come and go from his band a lot.
Yeah,
I'd just like to point that out at this time.
Yeah, my overall impression is Michael Schenker is probably difficult to work with. I think he, you know, he was acclaimed, you know, an acclaimed guitarist at 18.
Nobody's saying he isn't great.
No, yeah. He was great at 18, and I think he got a little maybe too swept up in his own genius or something like that. And, you know, much like Yngwie Malmsteen or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a suitable comparison.
The ego grows, you know. But another year goes by. We're 1978 now, and they record the album Obsession. And this one didn't do quite as well. But it did decent enough for them, and they got to keep playing arenas largely as an opener.
And there's still great stuff on it.
Yeah, there is. And this is Michael Schenker's last record for them, or with them.
For 15 years.
Yep. And it was recorded in an abandoned post office, which I thought was kind of interesting. And you can sort of tell, this one feels like they've run out of steam a bit. But there's still some highlights, and their highlights are like, you know, bigger than a lot of bands' highlights. So,
hell
like,
yeah.
You know, that's fine. The opening track, Only You Can Rock Me, is pretty sweet, I think. So let's play a little bit of that. It's sort of a generic title and a little Spinal Tap-ish, but I
originally had a parentheses, but if somebody else is needed, they will also do.
Right. Straightforward song about rock and roll.
And that guitar intro's got like major Kiss energy.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah, you can tell Kiss was a thing probably right about that time, and they were absorbing the influence.
Clearly, because, I mean, you know, Michael Schenker can claim he's a one of one original all he wants, but that, you know.
Right.
He's got a writing credit there, and that's a pretty Kiss sound and tune.
And the song Pack It Up and Go is pretty sweet, too. Another one I really like, though, is Ain't No Baby. Because it's also somewhat of a temple for hair metal. mostly on how it goes from like the melodic softer bit to the hard rocking verses and the power ballad choruses. Let's listen to just a little bit of that one. This is so hair metal.
Oh boy, yeah.
That's like that's the template right there. You
that's
know?
Some straight Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Of course, it's funny because I looked at the title and literally the thought that went through my head was, "Ain't no baby like the one I got." So maybe less hair metal there, but you know.
Yeah, they have another song on here that I don't have a sample for called "Looking Out for Number One." It's a little too hair metal ballady for my taste, and it ups the cheese factor in a pretty big way that UFO hadn't really done before. And it seems a little self indulgent in my opinion. So like
sometimes making those grasps for commercial success leads you to some.
Right.
Less awesome decisions.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so this is where they kind of stumble a little bit, I think. And the sales and critics, you know, reflected that. But the good news is Obsession got them touring again, and it laid the groundwork for one of their most heralded albums, which is the live record Strangers in the Night. And Strangers in the Night, you really, if you're like any of this kind of shit at all, you need to go get Strangers in the Night and check it out.
It just smokes.
It does smoke. It's a double live LP and it kicks ass. It was, it's songs from the shows that they did in Chicago and Louisville. And they were the last live shows with Michael Schenker. Schenker reportedly refused to do overdubs on the album. So what you're hearing is what he played live. You know, in the 70s, it was a big, you know, most people did overdub, you know, they'd go record the live.
You know, Kiss Alive, like the only live things you hear on there, I think, are the drums in the crowd.
Right, yeah. Michael Schenker's also expressed disappointment in the takes that were used, saying that other takes from the other shows were better.
You know, it seems like a lot of live albums from the 70s, everybody says that.
Right.
Like, well, you know, granted, the song remains the same as a double live album is a little bit... Yeah. And I think everybody from Zeppelin said, you know, there was way better shows you could have picked for this.
Right. Yeah. And kind of a side note, Michael Schenker briefly returned to the Scorpions right after this and then formed the Michael Schenker Group.
And Love Drive is a killer record.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. I think he does solos in like three songs or something like that. And
yeah. And we're going to be talking about the Scorpions and Michael Schenker in future episodes.
Hell yes, we are.
There's like no way to get around that. But yeah, so something for the future. Strangers in the Night is often listed as one of the best live albums of all time. Slash from Guns N' Roses says it's his favorite live album. Some of the shows were when they opened up for Blue Oyster Cult, so I thought that was kind of cool. I'm a huge Blue Oyster Cult
BOC's
fan.
Hell yeah, BOC's awesome.
So, and in 2020, last year there was a – wait, what year is it? It's 2022, so 2 years ago.
I don't know. Time's losing
right,
its
meaning. I've lost time. There was a deluxe reissue with more of the material from these shows, 8 CDs worth. So if you, you know, I'd start with the single disc double album version, but if you like what you hear, then, you know, dive in some more for sure. So we've covered the studio versions of a lot of this material, you know, but we encourage you to check out this awesome live album. The sound is definitely very alive, and it's a bit more raw, I think. And I think the vocals sound even more filled with emotion than the studio stuff. I think
he tears it up.
Yeah, he tears it up vocally.
Side three is probably like my favorite moment because it's just lights out and rock bottom, and it's just and they just
go off,
destroy them. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if you're into this kind of stuff at all, this should be a staple in one's collection. Really.
Absolutely.
It's like a live greatest hits album and one of the best snapshots of the band overall. Like, you really probably could get Strangers of the Night and be okay if you didn't want to delve any further into it. One of the engineers on Strangers in the Night was Mike Klink, who would later man the boards for Guns N' Roses, you know, which I thought was kind of cool. But if you're in a hurry, listen to Love to Love, which rules live and is heavier in spots than the album version, I would say.
Yeah. So,
and finally, we're going to stop in 1980 with No Place to Run. Probably Strangers in the Night was a better stopping place, in all honesty. But the band,
just to give a little bit of coloring to the whole thing, and this one was produced by George Martin.
That's why.
Is yep. I was wondering.
Yeah, when I was like looking through it, I was like, okay, well, they got George freaking Martin to produce an album finally after all this stuff, so we got to talk about that. It feels notable. It includes a cover of Mystery Train, the Junior Parker tune made famous by Elvis, which is sort of weird, but like, you know.
A bit.
But it is somewhat of a precursor for how hair metal bands like Cinderella and Tesla and Badlands all kind of turned to the blues at some point. You know, so that's kind of within, you know, the wheelhouse of what hair metal was doing. A highlight on this album for me is the song Young Blood, which is catchy but kind of glammy. So let's play a little bit of that. Too bad.
That's a straight up AC/DC guitar intro right there.
Yeah, it is. And the rest of the album isn't necessary. I mean, there's definitely some weak spots on this one, but like that's a pretty good tune.
Yeah, like he said, this marks where we get the Paul Chapman era of UFO. He also plays on, I believe he's the guitar player on The Wild, The Willing, and The Innocent, which is an album I picked up a while ago that it's all right. You know, it's like there's decent stuff on it.
Yeah.
And then I think he also is the guitar player on Mechanics, which is somebody called that a cover. And we're just like, no, that's good. Like, and the only reason I wanted to get to that point was just because at that point, after the Mechanics album, you see the departure of Pete Way, and he joins up with former Motorhead guitarist Fast Eddie Clark to form the band Fastway.
But the funny thing that
happens there is that Pete Way discovers he can't get out of his contract with Chrysalis Records, so he can't join the band.
Oh,
so he opts to instead join Ozzy's band, which ends up lasting like 3 seconds. and so Fastway, a band that's named after him, he never actually like was on a record of theirs.
Oh, ouch.
But it also shows that he has like there's like some double ties between the UFO world and Motorhead world because... Yeah. In those kind of wandery years when they were looking for somebody before, you know, Shanker came along, they had Larry Wallace in their band for a little bit. before Michael Schenker, and Larry Wallace was the guitar player on the first what was supposed to be the first Motorhead record.
Okay.
So if you want to sit here and do the Six Degrees game, it gets even crazier than that, because Larry Wallace was also in the band The Pink Fairies, which then means he UFO in a way connects back to the Pink Floyd even.
Oh, wow.
Because of people who have played with other people. And yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts about all this shit, is like how everything connects to everything else.
So it's best I stop myself now before I really digress.
Yeah, but that's kind of a run through of like a chunk of UFO records. The stuff that we thought was like, you know, relevant towards building up towards, you know, the launch of hair metal and when it really took off and stuff.
And, you
like
know,
that.
By all means, if you like it and you want to go farther, go farther. I mean,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're a good band.
Honestly, like the weird thing is, you know, like from 2002 or whatever, Current is like the most stable they've ever been as a band.
Right. Yeah.
And Vinnie Moore's no slouch, as we said before. So, right, I mean, yeah. You know, if you like the killer guitar player stuff, yeah, you should check out their later albums. Because, I mean, now I've only heard bits of them. Like,
yeah.
I went through and did some sampling of the Vinnie Moore stuff. And, you know, I mean, it may not all be as, like, vital and as exciting as the Michael Schenker years, but it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's pretty amazing they've had this level of longevity. But yeah, let us know what you think. Did you like this bonus episode? Did you like us doing like some influence stuff, or do you want us to just stick to the albums and all that stuff? Kind of the reason we did this, we'll give you a sneak preview since you've given us your patience. Next, we're gonna do a Scorpions album next.
That's right.
And this seemed to be like a good build up for that. So there is some method in our madness. But we hope you enjoyed listening to this, and we hope you stick around and listen to the future one.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, everybody.
All right, see you later.
It's a radio. It's old times.
That's right.